This baseball season, catch every pitch at Long Neck Sports Grill. Each location has 4K TVs, so you never miss a game. The menu is so extensive, you can get something different every time you visit. I love the wings. And no place in Northern Kentucky has a better beer selection. Locations in Wilder, Hebron, and Richwood. And when the weather is warm, there's nothing better than a warm spring night on Long Neck's outdoor patio. Long Neck Sports Grill, this baseball season, stay late, come often.
5 after 3, this is ESPN 1530. Good afternoon, my name's Mo Egger, and thank you for listening. Hopefully you're enjoying a pretty nice, warm, mid-November afternoon. It's sort of cloudy here in Kenwood. You're not listening to this show to hear me talk about the weather. You're probably not even listening to hear me, which is completely understandable. You will hear Rick Broering, MusketeerReport.com, NKU radio broadcast. We'll talk Xavier and Ohio State, which happens tomorrow night at the Cintas Center. Rick joins us at 3:45. We are looking forward to that. One of my favorite people to talk to is Jason Fitz of ESPN Radio, ESPN Digital, ESPN. Jason Fitz of ESPN. Two reasons we're having him on. Number one, there is nobody who cares more about or knows more about the Las Vegas Raiders than Jason. And he also hosts the Rankings Reaction Show for ESPN. And so we're going to talk Bengals Raiders. We're going to get his thoughts on the college football playoff and the rankings that came out last night. Looking forward to that at 4:20. Jim Kelly on the Bearcats a little bit later on. Richard Skinner at 5:20 on the Cincinnati Bengals. Let's start there because here's the reason you're listening. It ain't me. It's probably none of the aforementioned people. Zach Taylor's press conference. NFL head coaches, important people. They don't just stand in front of microphones one time per week. No. They don't just stand in front of microphones and answer questions 2 times per week. 3 times. Sunday, Monday, Wednesday. What's today? It's Wednesday. Here's Zach Taylor.
Time for the Zach Taylor press conference. Brought to you in part by 1 Hour Heating and Air on ESPN 1530, the official home of the Bengals.
I think it all makes sense to him. What you're asking out of a coverage or a pressure or a different look. And he does a great job pressuring, disguising, understanding how it all fits together. You know, some people don't really know how to pressure. Some people don't know how to disguise their pressures. Mike does a really good job of that. Yeah, he's been really good to have in all areas, and we're fortunate to have him. Akeem Davis Gaither?
No,
Akeem. Oh, I gotcha. How do we find out? It happened on a Friday in the off season. I don't remember if I found out on Saturday or Monday. It was off campus, you know, so I don't remember the specific details of how it unfolded, but we're glad to have him back.
Did you think this was a problem? Because that's pretty serious. A lot of
that season ended. Yeah, I mean, the timelines are all different. You know, Trey Waynes did it in August last year, and it put him through the season. This one was in May, so that's an extra really 60 days to be able to get back. And if you kind of look at where we're at, that's kind of about where he got back. So I think that he did a great job attacking the rehab. He came back as healthy and as quick as you could hope to have it. Some obviously would be a little bit longer, but it's worked out, and he's a great physical shape right here, and I think he feels really strong. He's been great in the weight room and all that stuff, and so it's good to go.
Was it what you saw from him last year, or maybe even
Well, we had high expectations for him going into the injury. I think Frank was really excited about him also. From what he'd seen on his college tape when he was in New York evaluating him at Kansas, so he came in with a good feel for Akeem. And then you know, he played a bunch of different roles for us last year and did well as a rookie. He was able to mentally handle it. Physically, played really well at Pittsburgh in his first start last year at left tackle. And so he was just a guy that we were excited to add in the mix and see what role he could play for us. And it just so happened we were at a point where we could take the opportunity to look at him right guard right now, and we're excited to move forward with him.
Before his injury, was he penciled in that right guard
potentially? You know, he was certainly in the mix. There was no real, hey, this is our surefire starter. We were going to let it all mix out. We had a lot of bodies in there, and we were just going to let it play out over the course of OTAs, training camp, and obviously he got removed from that mix when he got hurt.
What are you hoping to see from him moving forward so he can keep that?
Well, just continued improvement. You know, we knew that he has physical traits and mentally it all makes sense for him. He hadn't practiced very much. He played in the game. He did some really good things, some things we need to improve on. And so in the next game, it's just, okay, you've made maybe a mistake. Let's not repeat mistake. Let's see you just kind of get confidence, not the right word because he's a confident guy. He prepares himself the right way, but just confidence in, okay, I've gone against some really good D tackles. I'm going to keep doing it. I'm a good player. I belong. And just continue to play with more and more confidence. And that's not to say he hasn't played with confidence. It's just I think the more guys get in the mix and get to play in real games, the better that they're going to get.
Are you going to get Wilcox back today?
No.
What has to happen for him to be able to do
He has to test negative 2 days in a row. Or 10 days, cleared, no symptoms. I don't know the first sign that gave us. You know, he played left tackle at Kansas. He just, I think when you're around him and you get a chance for how he understands the big picture, some guys like to live on the edge. Some guys are better inside, and it makes more sense to them, and they play better that way. He's just a guy who you could tell this guy can handle it. If you move him around quite a bit, he can handle it. He's got long arms. He's got good quickness. He's got power. I mean, he's got all the traits you're looking for. You know, he's just a young player that needs a lot of reps, and so we're excited to have him on the team.
What do you thought of Trey Hopkins this season?
Trey gives us what we need inside. You know, he's a lot of the centers in this league. You need a guy that makes the thing go mentally. You know, I know what his quotes were earlier today. I love guys on this team that hold themselves to a higher standard, and really regardless of how they played early in the season, they know that they have to improve as the season goes. And that's what you expect from a veteran leader like Trey is. And so, again, we always hold our players to a high standard, but it makes you feel good as a coach to hear guys say, I should be playing better. I want more out of myself. And when you got a whole team of those guys, then usually good things are on the horizon, you know, at the tail end of the season. Yeah, there's a management plan that takes place with any player. Different positions handle it differently. I think Trey's really attacked the rehab in a mindful way. That's part of our relationship with the trainers and coaches and Trey and making sure it's all right and then making decisions as the season goes. You know, and so now we'll get him in the mix a little bit more during the week and see how that changes things on Sunday, good or bad, and continue to make the adjustments. We're always going to be flexible. We're always going to do what's best for the player. And those are just decisions we have to make as we go. Well, you know, Eli is the starting corner right now, and those other guys have roles that they start to work their way into. You know, it's Vernon has been here for 1.5 practices, basically, even though it's maybe a 12-day stretch. You know, the players were off and not practicing. Trey has now been around a little bit longer, and we've used him in some different roles on defense. And so we just continue to build off that stuff and see where we can help our defense, and it's good to have a bunch of players that have experience in the league that's only going to continue to serve us well.
With Vernon and Trey, they're both capable of playing out here. You have confidence in them on the outside, right?
Yeah. I think Vernon's got flexibility to do both. You know, he's got experience playing nickel. He's played a lot of ball outside these last 2 years, particularly in Tampa Bay and Houston, and so he's a guy that can kind of have dual purposes there. And then Trey's done a great job playing some different roles for us inside. Also, but we also know he's got a ton of experience playing outside, played a ton of safety in college. So, again, two guys that are really flexible and can play a lot of different roles for you.
Apple's been under a ton of fire externally with resource libraries and fan base. Why have you guys decided to
keep it that way?
Say
one more time.
I guess a lot of people have been questioning whether Eli should be starting. What have you guys seen that you believe that he's the best option right now?
Yeah, I think he does what we ask him to do. I don't know who's got him under fire. You know, it's... We expect our guys to play at a high level, and Eli's got a short memory. You know, if you give up a play that corners are going to give up, he does a great job kind of putting that away and moving on to the next play, and that's critical. You know, it's one of the hardest positions to play in all of football. That's one of my wife's favorite things to say, and it's true, you know. And so, you know, I don't envy the position those guys get in, but he does a great job. He plays with a high degree of confidence, and he's done some really good things for us this year. He's still not up this week. You know, so it's still week to week, but you'll see him on the rehab field, you know, as you go out there today. Yeah. Yeah, you know, Clay Johnson's got some experience that we claimed playing special teams in Carolina, and he's been in L.A. He's picking it up quickly, which is good because we're going to count on him in those areas. Calitro obviously has been in our system up through the last training camp, I guess. So we know what we're getting there. We're excited to add him back to the mix. But you're right, those guys all have to step up and make some plays for us, not only on defense, be ready to go, but on special teams as well. And you know, that's where a Michael Thomas safety comes in and can help fill some of those roles also with that body type and some of the tight ends we have as well. So Darren does a good job of being resourceful, practicing a ton of different guys on the practice squad all season because he knows, he's experienced enough to know that at some point you're going to need these guys and they need the reps. And so he's done a nice job kind of planning for worst case scenarios all season so that guys are ready when their number's called. Yeah, I have a ton of respect for their defensive ends. You know, 91 and 98 are tremendous players. They got high motors. They finish plays. They give these tackles a hard time. They give the tight ends a tough time in the run game. Also, they make a lot of plays there. Interior-wise, those guys are big and do a nice job against the run. The backers are fast. They can run. I mean, you look at Perriman and you look at Corey Littleton. Those guys can run and hit and understand the coverage. Perriman's played in it for a long time. Corey Littleton's just a smart football player. He's very experienced. I've been around him for a couple years. The two young safeties can fly around and make plays. They in some ways remind me of our guys. You know, these guys are high picks and they play like high picks. They got a knack for making plays on the ball. They're not afraid to hit you. And their corners have a ton of experience. I mean, the two starting corners right now played against us last year when we played the Chargers. Now they're in the same scheme, same system. So I've got a lot of respect for their defense and what they do and what they how they attack the opponents and the stresses they put on you. They've done a really nice job, and our guys got to be ready to come to play on Sunday.
But is that the kind of defense that they aren't going to make a mistake, that they want you to make a mistake? They're not going to gamble? They're going to be solid, and they're going to help you make a mistake?
Yeah, they're not overly complex with the number of coverages they call, but they make their complementary stuff look the same. That makes it hard on defense. So subtly, it all looks the same, but it can be different at times, and it could put you in a tough spot. But their guys just have a ton of confidence in what they're doing and how they're playing it. And it's a defense that they understand their strengths of the defense, and they also understand the weaknesses of the defense and how people like to attack them. And they do a good job, you know, playing for that kind of stuff. And, you know, so, again, it's just they do a really nice job making it uncomfortable for the offense. And you got to be really disciplined with how you attack them. It's really everybody on offense understanding the plan wholeheartedly in all aspects, you know, and not just say you got to understand you're part of the game plan this week. It's we've probably explained a little bit more to our players this week on the big picture of how you want to go about playing these guys. And again, it's a tough defense and they're well coached. And I just look at the coaching staff on their side of the ball on defense, and it is a ton of experience, a ton of guys that I haven't worked with necessarily, but I've always had a bunch of respect for. And they're clearly in sync, and they get the most out of their players, and they do a really nice job.
Jack, what are your thoughts on installing something new on offense in the middle of the season as opposed to we're going to install everything in training camp?
Yeah.
And then maybe during the year we'll follow up on that.
Yeah, I think we do that, certainly, because there's things just you need game plan thoughts going into each game. I couldn't tell you the exact percentage as it plays out on the overall course of the game plan, but there are new thoughts that you introduce every week. Every game I've ever been here, we've had new things for players to learn. And when we show them crystal clear, here's why it's new, here's why it's in, it's going to help us win. And then there's a lot of things that you do that we've been practicing since last May.
This baseball season, catch every pitch at Longneck Sports Grill. Each location has 4K TVs, so you never miss a game. The menu is so extensive, you can get something different every time you visit. I love the wings, and no place in Northern Kentucky has a better beer selection. Locations in Wilder, Hebron, and Richwood, and when the weather is warm, there's nothing better than a warm spring night on Longneck's outdoor patio. Longneck Sports Grill, this baseball season, stay late, come often.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woo-hooer, a hand clapper, a high-fiver? I kind of like the high-five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void or prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
We may just window dress it, you know, so it may feel a little different to some of our players because they're in a different position running the same concept, but maybe the linemen are hearing the same things. Joe Burrow knows the same read. It's just different people doing different things. So there's kind of two different ways to look at a new play. Is it brand new? We've never done it before. Or is it just a wrinkle that maybe feels a little bit new to a couple of the players on the team? But for most of the guys, it's the same concept running over and over. Well, I think the way I look at it is through the first half of the season, we've just put ourselves in control in the back half of the season. A lot of people go to the midway point, and now you're really counting on other teams to do work for you, or your way out, whatever it is. We've just put ourselves in a position where all we have to do is worry about the game in front of us and not pay attention to one other result that happens and go play the Raiders and do as best we can and then move on the next week. And so that's kind of where I look at it as the midway point is, put ourselves in a position where we can control, focus on the Raiders, and good things can happen. If you just have a very simplistic, narrow focus from week to week, then we'll be in good shape.
This has been the Zac Taylor Press Conference on ESPN 1530, the official home of the Bengals.
All right, there you go. Zac Taylor addressing the media earlier today. Bengals taking on the Las Vegas Raiders Sunday at 4:05. You will hear the game live on ESPN 1530. Tonight, you'll hear Bengals game plan with Dan Hoard and Dave Lapham. That from 6 o'clock until 8 o'clock tonight live. 2 hours wall-to-wall Bengals as soon as we are done right here on ESPN 1530 as well. A lot of Bengals to get to. You'll hear Joe Burrow a little bit later on, and we'll dive into this game at 5:20 with our buddy Richard Skinner from Local 12, who does an awesome job, and obviously we love having him on. Last night, college football playoff rankings, part three. I think the age of paranoia, for me at least, when it comes to this process, is over. We'll spend a few minutes on that next. New studios in a couple of weeks. Are we getting new microphones? Because this one smells really bad today. I'm not going to lie to you. This microphone, I don't know what Tony did to it from noon to two. This smells like throwing up hot dogs. 27 after 3, I'm Mo Egger. This is ESPN 1530. I mean, I don't know if I can, I don't know if I can talk into this thing for 3 hours. Oh, man. It's kind of like I was tweeting last night from the UC game about the guy wearing a lot of cologne near us. Terry, you wear a lot of cologne? You a cologne guy? I haven't worn cologne since I was maybe 14. I don't know I don't know many adults who wear cologne. I just travel in non-cologne circles. This microphone could use some cologne. Last night, college football playoff rankings are out, and I joked about this, and I'm not going to say I haven't been guilty of being paranoid. It is a process that, to a degree, invites paranoia, especially if you are rooting for a school outside the Power Five conferences, but I made an allusion last night to Cincinnati being ranked fifth in the weekly conclusion of 3 days' worth of paranoia, because that's what this whole thing the last couple of weeks has involved, paranoia. Because, let's face it, the Bearcats haven't played great, and, you know, I've said often about the game on Friday against USF. They played well enough, I think, to fend off new criticism. I think they didn't play well enough to get rid of the existing criticism. It's there, but we get so worked up about, well, did they win by enough? What's the committee going to do? And the committee the last couple of weeks has not moved them down. They have not punished them for not being victorious by more points than they were victorious by. They haven't been punished for not winning by as much as they should. I think we've spent way too much time worrying about that. The message that has been sent has been win, and you're fine. I got to be honest with you. I don't spend that much time on Gary Barta and what he says. he is explaining a process that has flaws, and when somebody's explaining a process that has flaws, they're going to say things that people who believe the process has flaws find take issue with. But so the message, the concrete message was, win games if you're UC, and you are fine. And if you win and someone in front of you loses, you're going to move up, which is what happened last week. Nobody in front of them lost. Cincinnati won. They stayed the same. I think to a degree, some are a little bit too worried about schools like Notre Dame. I'll go ahead and make this guarantee. If UC is 13-0 and Notre Dame is 11-1, Notre Dame is not going to make the college football playoff instead of Cincinnati. I'm not worried about Oklahoma State. The committee has said Oklahoma State's four spots behind UC. This to me is simple. Does a team in front of UC lose? And the bigger question, and the question that the committee cannot answer, is will they indeed go undefeated? By the way, there was something important that did happen last night. Here's ESPN's Heather Dinich.
I think it's significant because that does give them a ranked opponent in the conference championship game one more opportunity to impress the selection committee. And one of the other things that Gary Barta was asked today was, has there been any consideration for flipping Notre Dame ahead of Cincinnati in spite of the head-to-head at this point? And his answer was an honest no. We haven't talked about that yet. Wouldn't they talk about that if you have a one-loss Cincinnati and a one-loss Notre Dame that both didn't have a conference championship game? Does that conversation change? It might. Does it help if they lose a close game to a ranked Houston as opposed to an unranked Houston? All of those tiny details factor into that conversation. So if nothing else, it certainly cannot hurt Cincinnati that Houston is now in that top 25.
She was answering a question from Jason Fitz and Mike Golic Jr. Jason's going to be on the show at 420 today about the significance of Houston being ranked in the top 25 for the first time all year long. Houston has clinched a berth in the conference championship game, and so if the Bearcats make that game, and by the way, they can still lose one of the next two and play in that game, but if they go in undefeated, there's a very, very good chance Houston has one more game left. They're going to play a ranked team. Now, is the committee going to make much of a separation between beating the 22nd ranked team in the country or 24th ranked team in the country and a team that is not ranked but has been given consideration? I don't know, but that to me was significant. It illustrates there is a chance for what the committee would say is a good win in the AAC title game against Houston. But we've spent a lot of time on margin of victory and style points. And the question I have is, are they going to go undefeated? And we asked this on Twitter yesterday, poll question, thanks to our friends at the Picture Frame Company. And over 80% said, yes, the Bearcats are going to go undefeated. And look, they're going to be favored in all three games. They're favored this week against SMU. They will be favored against ECU. And they'll be favored against Houston at Nippert Stadium. But I think we've looked at their struggles in recent weeks through the wrong lens. The lens hasn't been, are they winning by enough to impress the committee? The lens should be, are they playing well enough to not be beaten by a team that's better than USF and Tulane and Tulsa and Navy? And I keep coming back to the football parts of this. UC's defense, for different reasons over, I think, the past three games, has revealed some issues. Not stopping the run against Tulsa, being out-toughed, if you will, against Tulane, not putting a lot of pressure on the quarterback against USF, struggling mightily on third down, third and longs too, third and 16s, third and 10s. Very good offensive team in SMU on Saturday. Quality quarterback in Holton Ahlers a week from Friday, and a good Houston offense, assuming they play them on the 4th of December. That, to me, is the bigger question. And I now have the belief if they take care of business and win and someone in front of them loses. Now, I think it would be interesting. Michigan doesn't have a signature win yet. If Michigan were to beat Ohio State, there's a pretty good chance Michigan's going to leapfrog. But, The Oregon's going to have to play Utah twice. There's still the SEC title game to sort through. The message, I think, has been pretty clear. Win, and we're not going to punish you. Win, and you're at the very worst going to hold steady where you are. Win, and if someone in front of you loses, you're going to move up.
And while I'm no math major, when you're fifth, the only place to move up to is the top four. It is a very realistic possibility if this team can go undefeated. And I think you're being fair if you look at the teams they play and look at the way UC is playing and doubt it maybe a little more than you might have a couple of weeks ago. Jim Kelly from the UC radio broadcast on this topic coming up at 4:40. Looking forward to that. Rick Boring is going to be on our show in about 10 minutes. Xavier and Ohio State tomorrow night at the Cintas Center. That game should be an absolute blast. We'll talk about the Musketeers and some NKU Norse hoops as well coming up at 4:45. Speaking of college basketball, 105 of 120. I'll explain, and you'll hear from Wes Miller next. Right after we're done, we'll give you a Bengals injury report in a bit. Also, the Luke Fickell radio shows tonight at 8 o'clock. Dan Hord's going to be busy. 8 to 9, that on 700 WLW. College basketball in the area tonight. Miami is hosting Stetson, Dayton hosting Lipscomb, and Indiana, part of the Gavitt Games, which the Big East is 4-0 in. IU hosting St. John's. We gave you Seton Hall last night. Xavier and Ohio State in that event tomorrow at the Cintas Center. Rick Boring on that. In just a few minutes, UC basketball last night, the Bearcats covered the number against Alabama A&M. I wouldn't go as far as to say it was an uneven performance. Jeremiah Davenport's post defense left a lot to be desired against Jalen Johnson last night. Cincinnati had some issues offensively against Alabama A&M zone, specifically the 1-3-1. I would say under Wes Miller, UC has played 120 minutes. 105 of those minutes have been pretty good. And, you know, I keep coming back to referencing November basketball, how often disjointed and ugly and hard it can be to watch. I don't think that really applies to this team. I'm still not sure how good they can be. I don't think the ceiling is that high. But let's be honest, you know, they've got tough games in Kansas City next week. They're going to be huge dogs against Illinois, who's already lost a game. But the non-league schedule, especially at home, is not very good. And the bottom of this conference is not very good. I think there's wins to be had. I don't know that there's enough for them to be an NCAA tournament team. But I like where this is headed. I like, you know, even last night without Victor Locken, it sort of illustrated how much he's meant to the interior of that defense. Odi Oguama did a nice job on the glass last night. They still collectively are playing pretty well together. David Ajulius had a very good game last night. I like everything I'm seeing from him. This looks like a good, cohesive unit. There is a lot of work to be done. But how many teams play three games in November where you walk away from it going, yeah, they've played 120 minutes, and about 105 of them have been all right. Here's Wes Miller on his team's defense last night.
As I told the guys in the locker room, winning's winning, and it matters. And we're always going to appreciate it and enjoy it. So I'm proud of us finding a way to win. I thought there was a really good stretch there in the second half. I didn't like the first couple possessions. We had a silly turnover and didn't sprint back. And, boy, that's the kind of stuff that drives me crazy and the kind of stuff that I think is unacceptable. But we called timeout. The guys kind of were already talking amongst themselves before I even got into the timeout, and I thought for the next 8 or 9 minutes we were pretty darn good. I thought we guarded. I thought we played aggressively but within our structure offensively, and some really good things happened to us, and you're able to push a lead out, and it was difficult for Alabama A&M for the rest of the way from there. I didn't think we played our best basketball tonight. I thought we looked out of sorts at times. I didn't think we were consistent with our defensive energy and our defensive approach at times. We can play better. We're going to get back to work and try to play better. And we got a big one in here in 48 hours against a really good Presbyterian team. Presbyterian may not have the name, but from what I've seen, before tonight, they've started off the year, I believe 2-3-0, and they've had some good wins, and they're a good basketball club. So we got to play a little better on Thursday night.
That'll be tomorrow night now at 7 o'clock against the Presbyterian Blue Hose. Cincinnati, and again, I would agree with that assessment. There were lulls in that game where offensively they lacked some cohesion against the zone, and defensively there was some slippage. Could you have ever thought that we would be lamenting the absence of Victor Locken? And yet we were, and we did, and you hope he's able to go tomorrow. It didn't seem to be treated like it was a huge deal, but hopefully he's able to help out because he does offer some protection at the rim. By the way, Presbyterian and UC basketball, it brings back terrible memories because the Sweet 16 year, UC's last Sweet 16 year, the 11-12 season, Presbyterian beat Cincinnati by 2 at Fifth Third Arena. So,
hey, when you and your buddies are looking for a place to watch baseball this season, how about Longneck Sports Grill? Each location has 4K TVs all over the place, so you'll never miss a pitch. The menu is so extensive that you can get something different every time you visit, and no place in Northern Kentucky has a better beer selection. There are locations in Wilder, Hebron, and Richwood, and when the weather is warm, there's nothing better than a spring night on Longneck's outdoor patio. This baseball season, Longneck Sports Grill. Stay late. Come often.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Obviously, completely different team, completely different circumstances. But you cannot mention Presbyterian playing Cincinnati without folks like me remembering that night at Fifth Third. Meanwhile, tomorrow night at the Cintas Center, Xavier's going to host Ohio State. Rick Broering, MusketeerReport.com, in the first 80 minutes of XU season and what needs to be done to beat the Buckeyes tomorrow night next. It's 13 away from 4 o'clock. This is ESPN 1530. By the way, important business transaction I noticed last night. We'll get to that coming up at 4:05. Jason Fitz of ESPN at 4:20. Richard Skinner later on, 5:20 today. Speaking of Skinny, he hosts a podcast, the Skinny Podcast, with our guy Rick Broering, MusketeerReport.com. One half of the Skinny Podcast. Also the color analyst on NKU radio broadcasts, and he's with us now. I did not hear the last Skinny Podcast. I apologize. I listen to it on a regular basis. Did you guys address the question I had for you?
I believe so. Someone submitted a question based on something you said in your show, and then we also took a question that was actually from you. The whole pancake beer thing that someone brought to our attention that you apparently did, is just foul. I mean, that's a disgusting, disgusting move by you.
By me?
Yeah, pancakes and then washing it down with beer?
I've done that before, but that's not like a regular thing.
I don't know. Someone told us that you were talking about it on your show, and they wanted to know how many pancakes and beer we could wash down if they had to be equal number.
So I went to a pancake breakfast at a church once. My friend invited me. And she said, look, like $10, it's all you could eat pancakes. And I had 11 pancakes. They weren't enormous pancakes, but I had 11 pancakes. And we got done with that. And it's now it's like noon on Saturday. It's like, cool, what are we going to do now? And she's like, well, there's a tavern down the street. Oh, well, let's go chase that back with beer. I don't think I drank 11 beers. So I'm not, like, when I make my daughter pancakes, I don't sit down with her and pour her a glass of orange juice and then bust open a cold one for myself. That's not what I'm talking about, but I mean, do I love pancakes? Yes. Do I love beer? Yes. And I don't see anything necessarily wrong with, not necessarily combining the two, but putting them adjacent to one another.
That's fine. Look, I like both as well, and I have no issue with the story you just told. It was explained a little bit differently to us for the podcast.
All right.
So,
all right. Well, I've got to listen, and I do listen to it every week. I've been busy, so now I'll have to get caught up because I'm sure you do another one this week. What has been the best part of the first 80 minutes of this Xavier season?
Well, I think the best part would be the last 20 minutes that they played against Kent State. The second half of that game, they looked pretty darn good for the first time this year. They did some things defensively differently, and I think that helped them. And then they also did a better job of getting the ball inside, whether it was throwing it inside to Jack Nungy in the post or driving it with their guards, Colby Jones, Paul Scruggs. Adam Kunkel made a play or two off the dribble. I think that was really the best stretch of basketball we've seen from this team.
It did feel to me like in the last 15 minutes or so against Kent State, they're not hitting outside shots. They have good shooters, guys who are supposed to be good shooters, not making outside shots. And Travis finally goes, screw it. We're not going to take those shots. We're going to have to work the ball inside. And they did that effectively.
Yeah, and to some extent, it's sort of like the chicken and the egg thing, right? Like, yes, they did a better job of getting the ball inside, and they threw it into Jack Nungi in the second half. There were more post touches and paint touches in general. But they also happened to hit a few threes right during that time. Nate Johnson had a pull-up three in transition. There was a three towards the end of the half by Jerome Hunter, which was just kind of a guarded three. So, like, on one hand, yes, they did a good job, better job getting inside. On the other hand, they also started making some more threes, which always makes it easier to get it inside because the defense has to come out and guard you. So I think this team definitely needs to do a better job of just making wide-open jump shots when they get those opportunities, and that'll help them get the ball inside a little bit more often.
Yeah, I was going to go there next. This is not going to be a great three-point shooting team. They can't be a terrible three-point shooting team. Right now they're shooting 25% from three. They had the early barrage in the first game against Niagara. What kind of three-point shooting team is this going to be?
Well, that would be my biggest concern right now if I'm a Xavier fan. You just don't know. Travis Steele is, I think everyone felt he had done a good job of getting this roster to a point where they finally did have more skill. They did have some shooters, and they're built in a way to which they're built around their perimeter skill and their guards. And they still, to this point, just have not been able to shoot well since he took over the program. This is going on year four where they just really struggle from the outside. So that's something that they really need to get fixed this year if they're going to have a chance to make a run at the tournament.
I think the exciting thing is we've seen the early makings of a Colby Jones star turn.
Yeah, I talked about that before the year, that I wasn't sure if he realized that he could be the best player on this team or that he needs to be a go-to type player on this team, especially while Zach Fremantle is out with his foot injury. And to this point, at least, he has done that. Now, in the first game against Niagara, he wasn't very efficient. He missed some shots. He had some turnovers. But this second game against Kent State, he was very good and did it exactly how you'd expect Colby Jones to do it. He was rebounding a lot. He was getting hustle points. He was converting defense into offense. Those are the types of things, especially when Zach Fremantle comes back, where Colby's going to be really valuable because you don't have to play through him, give him a ton of shots, and let him control the ball on the offensive end. He can go out and manufacture some points on his own.
Rick Broering, MusketeerReport.com. Rick is on Twitter, at Rick Broering. I watched almost all of Ohio State and Akron, a game the Buckeyes should have lost. I haven't seen much of them against Niagara or Bowling Green. They dominated Bowling Green. E.J. Liddell's season is off to a great start. If XU is going to win this game tomorrow night, where do they do that against Ohio State?
Well, these two teams are different in the sense that Ohio State's best two players, E.J. Liddell, Zed Key, are both front court players. That's their starting power forward and their starting center. That's where Xavier's a little bit weak right now. They don't have as many bodies in the front court, and they're kind of inexperienced there. So playing tough inside, especially on the defensive end and on the glass, is going to be a huge key. But on the other end of the court, Xavier's best two players, we just talked about Paul Scruggs and Colby Jones, both playing really well, are much better than Ohio State's guards, where they are either young with guys like Michi Johnson and Malachi Branham, or they have an experienced transfer in Jamari Wheeler from Penn State, but he's not really doing a whole lot. So it's sort of strength on weakness on either side of the court. And my concern for Xavier is if they're not going to make threes from the outside, then it's going to be tough to beat the front court of Ohio State. And the Buckeyes have actually been shooting the ball pretty well from the outside, too, overall. They're at about 36%. They have four or five different guys that have been hitting threes. So it's going to be a good challenge for Xavier.
This matchup tomorrow night, part of the Gavitt Games pitting Big East teams versus Big Ten opponents. I watched Seton Hall last night win in Ann Arbor against a very good Michigan team. The Big East is 4-0 in this event. What do those four games tell us about the quality of this league, if anything?
Well, I don't know that it really says a lot because it's so early in the season, almost anything can happen. But when you're in a conference like the Big East and it's usually pretty evenly matched and the teams are going to beat up on each other in the conference season, the non-conference games, especially those big ones like number 4 Michigan and number Illinois, which both went down to Seton Hall and Marquette respectively, that's huge because once you get into conference season, the committee and your quote-unquote resume are going to be now, well, they're all really good teams that are beating up on each other. If you lose these games early, then it's a bunch of bad teams beating up on each other. So winning games like this can legitimately help the Big East get, you know, five, potentially six teams into the tournament if they continue to win like this.
The game on Friday between UNC Greensboro and NKU, following it online, it goes to overtime. It seemed like an incredible basketball game, a tough loss for the Norse. They stage a second-half comeback. For the uninitiated, tell me what went down on Friday night at BB&T.
Well, it was a great game. The big thing for NKU was just inside, they weren't able to handle the physicality of UNCG for much of the game. I think talking to Darren Horn after the game and the post-game show, that was really the big takeaway from him, is that we have enough talent and skill on the offensive end, and they've got some young guys that are really figuring out and are going to be good, but they've got to grow up a little bit in terms of their physicality and toughness. They can't just roll the balls out there and expect to be better than people. They're going to have to get a little more gritty, I think, and that's what that game taught them.
Most pancakes you've eaten in one sitting is what?
Are we talking like the little silver dollar pancakes or like the good
stuff? Normal, like there are some places where they give you a pancake and it's the size of a steering wheel. I'm not talking about those.
Right.
And I'm not talking
like
about pancakes.
Normal mom pancake.
Yeah, normal mom pancake. Not like the size of a hockey puck, just a normal pancake. Like how many of those could you put back in one sitting?
I think I could probably go five-ish if I'm really throwing them down.
Okay. Is that with toppings? Is that with like fruit in them? I was never a big fruit my pancake guy till I met my wife, and she knows how to like put the fruit inside the pancake, and it's awesome.
Yeah, I don't like the toppings inside the pancakes. I don't even like the chocolate chips, really. That's just too much. I want a straight pancake, a decent slab of butter, and a little bit of syrup, personally.
Very good. So five is your number?
I think about five. Yeah, it's not something I really try to like do eating contests with. It's not something that's easy to eat a lot of.
Yeah, I'm not big into like, in my younger days, I was big, I'm going to out-eat you. And now it's like, what am I going to do that to myself for? I got enough problems as is. All right, enjoy the game tomorrow, and we'll talk next week. Thank you so much.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Rick Boring, his website is musketeerreport.com. Xavier and Ohio. I have not, college basketball lines are weird. They don't come out to the last minute. XU hosting OSU, rematch of that game at Rupp Arena, 2007 NCAA tournament, the Justin Cage revenge game tomorrow night at Cintas. Should be an awesome atmosphere. And look, the Musketeers have a chance to do what UC could not do. They played them at home in the opener of the newly refurbished Fifth Third Arena, Mick Cronin's last year. They played him in the first game of John Brannan's first season. That game was in Columbus. The Bearcats won neither. Jaron Cumberland foul trouble early in the first half of that game against OSU at Fifth Third. And just not having enough playmakers down the stretch for that game in Columbus 2 years ago. So Bearcats could do it. Could Xavier tomorrow night? We'll find out. Should be a lot of fun. A couple minutes away from 4 o'clock. Your phone calls are ahead. We have not taken a phone call yet, Taryn. What's your go-to cologne? You're a cologne guy. Not a big guy. As an adult, I don't think I've worn cologne. Tried aftershave once, and then I came to work, and people are like, dude, guy at the UC game last night, I mean, I don't know what this guy was trying to accomplish. I feel bad for people he was sitting next to. Feel bad for anybody he was driving to and from the game with. A lot of cologne. A lot of cologne. If I can smell your cologne from like 5 feet away, that's a problem. Hey, by the way, congratulations to the owner of the Cincinnati Reds. Let's give it up to Bob Castellini next. Box is filling in for Dan tonight. Where's Dan? I mean, we love Box. Dan has Luke Fickell show. Is that what's going on? Wayne Boxmiller in for Dan. Why didn't Dan say that? Why didn't Dan say, listen to Wayne Boxmiller and Dave Lapham tonight? He did tweet it, but he couldn't say it in a little promo. Hi, I'm Mo Egger. This is ESPN 1530. Thank you for listening. Jason Fitz from ESPN in 15 minutes. Nobody knows more about the Raiders and... he's obviously somebody who does a lot of college football content as well. I watch his reaction show. Everybody else watches the college football playoff selection committee official rankings reveal. Fine. I watch Jason Fitz. And so we're going to talk with Jason Fitz coming up in just about 15 minutes. Also, Jim Kelly on the Bearcats at 4:45. The football end of this to me is a little bit more interesting right now than what the committee is doing and not doing. And a little bit more on Jesse Bates, which we touched on briefly yesterday. If you are a certain type of Reds fan, you should be very, very, very happy today. I will explain why after we talk with Jeff in Virginia. Jeff, you're on ESPN 1530.
Hey, Mo, how are you?
I am delightful. Yourself?
Man, your tweets Friday night and Saturday after the game and the Cologne tweet are just awesome stuff.
I don't know that that sentence has come out of anybody's mouth. Your Cologne tweet was awesome.
I wore something called gray flannel after college. Maybe I was like your buddy. It sure didn't seem to work with the ladies too much, that's for sure.
Yeah. By the way, I got an email here asking, am I sure it wasn't perfume? Well, number one, it was mostly men sitting near me last night. Number two, I don't wear cologne. I haven't worn cologne since I was like in high school. But I know the difference between cologne and perfume. This was definitively cologne.
Right. Hey, did I hear Barta say last night something about not watching the games?
He talked about watching games being a part of it, and then he was talking about Michigan and Michigan State, and I'm paraphrasing him here, but he said something to the effect of, if you take away watching the games, .. then you apply the metrics, and it's like, yeah, but you can't take away watching the games.
And then said something about strength of schedule, too, indicating a preference against UC yet again, right?
Well, that was the implication, but, you know, again, Cincinnati didn't fall. The only time he's talked, to the best of my knowledge, specifically about UC's schedule is how they performed against Tulane and Navy. Since then, that hasn't come up. But, look, we all understand that strength of schedule is a part of this, but, again, what's important from last night specifically is they vaulted Houston into the top 25, which means if Houston wins its last game, UC will have a chance for what the committee would say is a good win.
Yeah, and that's a good point, and I hope that comes to fruition. Did you also say Joe spoke today?
Joe Burrow, Taryn, do we have, did Joe Burrow address the assembled Cincinnati professional football media today? I'd be honest with you, I did not look at the schedule.
Yeah, I mean, the social media crew over there is usually great, but
yeah,
I can't.
He spoke.
Okay, yes. I can't yet. They just haven't posted it to the Bengals app or anything yet. You know, he's such a flatliner when he talks to the media, but there's always, you know, he for an NFL quarterback, he's pretty damn honest about what he thinks.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah, it's refreshing, and then there's going to be a moment for some where it's not. I love honesty, and so sign me up for it any day of the week.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's great. I'll have to wait and see if they post that sometime.
We will have some of that for you if you stick around at 5:33.
Great. Thanks, Mo.
Okay, Jeff, thank you so much for the phone call. Yeah, the Houston thing, the major development for UC specifically was Houston. Because the Big Ten stuff is going to take care of itself. Look, if we get to status quo and Ohio State beats Michigan State, which is what everybody expects, they're 19-point favorites, and Michigan and Ohio State play against each other, and Michigan beats Ohio State, do I expect Michigan to leapfrog UC? Yeah. They will have beaten a team in front of Cincinnati. Yeah. But a lot in the Big Ten can still really sort of take care of itself. And if Oregon loses to Utah, they got to play them twice, including in the Pac-12 championship game. I think the message was pretty clear. Win, you're fine. Win, teams above you lose. Pretty good chance we're going to move you up. And then the big takeaway for me was the committee has said Houston's a good team. The committee has said Houston's good. You might not think they are. You might look down your nose at the AAC. The committee has said Houston's good. Barring two losses in their final two regular season games, UC is going to play Houston. So that'd be a chance for a good win. 10 minutes after 4 o'clock. You know what a good day? I was reading this. You know, Taryn, I'm a big, I get up every day. And I get a cup of coffee, and I sit down, and I read the Cincinnati Business Courier. Big Business Courier guy. Before I do anything else, I sit there, I eat a tangerine, a piece of coffee cake, have some coffee, sit there with my daughter. She watches Peppa Pig. I read the Cincinnati Business Courier every single morning. So there I am yesterday. I've got my coffee cake. And I'm reading here about, I'll just read part of the piece for you here. Gurney's Resorts, which operates resorts in New York and Rhode Island along with Scottsdale-based BB Hotels, New York-based Metrovest Equities, and Building Management, announced on Monday the acquisition of Sanctuary Camelback Mountain Resort and Spa in Paradise Valley. Well, I'm intrigued. The group is buying the resort at 5700 East McDonald Drive from Robert H. Castellini, who's owned it since 1992. According to Maricopa County property records, the sale price of the resort was $85.34 million. Well, wait a minute. Robert H. Castellini. I think I know who that is, but I need comfort, so I keep reading. The Sanctuary, known for its spa packages and exclusivity. Blah, you're not going to stay there. I'm not going to stay there. They got an executive chef who's on the Food Network. It's too ritzy for me, so who cares? But then I'm reading down here. Here's a quote. Our success was possible due to our phenomenal team, blah, blah, blah. Gurney's Resorts appreciates this great honor, understands the importance of the sanctuary's history and charm. And to look, okay, I don't care. But then here's the, okay, wait a minute. Castellini is CEO of the Cincinnati Reds and chairman of the Castellini Companies. That's right. The owner of the Cincinnati Reds just sold his ritzy Rich Boy Resort for $85 million. Now, you and I both know, and I believe this at least, I think one of the great accomplishments in sports in my lifetime, and this is not aimed specifically at the Reds, I think this is a baseball thing. One of the great accomplishments in sports in my lifetime has been how Major League Baseball owners have somehow gotten fans to emotionally invest in how well they're doing financially. I hear it all the time. Hey, Team X should go and sign this guy. Instead, they're trading away their best player. Well, yeah, but I mean, they got to get below the luxury tax and they got to get things straight financially. It's like, yeah, what do you care? But it seems to me that there's a lot of fans who seem to care deeply about how baseball owners are doing financially. So if that's you, as it relates to Bob Castellini, today's a big day for you. Your guy just sold his hotel thingy for $85 million. Oh, I don't know where the parade's going to be. I don't know where you folks are gathering to celebrate this, but I'd love to be there just to check it out. Look, the Castellini family is allowed to operate their business any way they please. And I think, you know, I know business owners who they have multiple enterprises and they treat each one like a silo, right? I mean, I know people who are involved in, they own restaurant franchises and then they own this thing and they have this and each one's a silo, right? One doesn't necessarily affect the other and one isn't always used to prop up the other. And that's your business. That is your, it is Bob Castellini's money. He's allowed to operate his businesses and his enterprises in whatever way, and I say he, it's really they, in whatever way they please. They have no obligation to take money from the sale of a resort or whatever other businesses may be thriving. They have no obligation to take that money and apply it to the baseball team. And there are plenty of people who own stuff who will do whatever they can to make what they own work, but they're not going to go into their own personal fortune. Again, that's their prerogative. But it is your prerogative to wish that they would take some of that money from things like the, what is it? Gurney Resort? Yeah. That they would take some of that 85 mil and apply it to the baseball team. The fact that they won't doesn't necessarily make them bad baseball owners. Doesn't make them bad stewards of the franchise. But when you say we're going to do everything in our power to win, it's going to strain credibility with a lot of people when folks in the middle of you giving away players see something like this and go, huh, well, why don't you take some of that coin and put it into the ball club and maybe keep Wade Miley. Maybe go get some relief pitchers that people have heard of. Perhaps extend a guy like Luis Castillo, which, by the way, Ken Rosenthal had a nugget on him last night that we'll get to in just a bit. I'm not going to sit in this chair or go on Twitter or use whatever platform I have to say that, look, they sold this hotel, and so they have to take that money and put it into the team. Do I wish they would? Well, yes. As a fan, yeah. Because I don't care about their personal finances. I don't care about their other companies, to be honest with you. I want them to do well because they employ people. But what I care about is the baseball team. And so if you tell me that they're going to cut corners in other areas or take resources from other areas to put it in the baseball team, yeah, I'm in because I love the baseball team. And I don't care about the Gurney Hotel or whatever they call that thing. I don't care. and I don't care about fruit selling and whatever else they're involved in. But you are absolutely allowed to say, well, wait a minute, you're crying poverty with your ball club, but everything else seems to be working out okay. Wouldn't it make sense for you to take some of that coin and invest it into your baseball team and perhaps reap the long-term benefits of doing as such and then pay back what you borrowed from? And we've talked often about the relationship that people are having with the Reds and how it feels strained. News items like this aren't going to help. That's reality. That is reality. A Reds fan who is wondering, why can't you make the team better? How come all I'm hearing about is aligning payroll and trading away established players? Why are you giving guys away? Why does the emphasis not to be on winning? The fan who consumes all of that and then reads this, how do you think they're going to feel? I'm not saying he shouldn't have sold his resort. I'm not saying he should take the $85 million and put it into the Reds. I am saying that you are going to have a hard time explaining to folks how the baseball team's got to suffer when everything else seems to be doing just fine. 17 minutes after 4 o'clock, two local lines open at 513-749-1530. Jason Fitz from ESPN on his beloved Las Vegas Raiders in the college football playoff next. 20 minutes after 4 o'clock, this is ESPN 1530. UC color analyst Jim Kelly in 25 minutes on the Bearcats and what defensive issues may have revealed themselves against USF that they have to fix in time for Saturday. But first, speaking of the Raiders, I've been looking forward to doing this for two reasons, or for three. One, I really like this guy. Two, I don't know anybody who cares more or knows more about the Las Vegas Raiders than this guy. And three, he's a great guest to have on when the college football playoff rankings affect your team, and they certainly do for Bearcat fans. Jason Fitz of ESPN and ESPN Radio, one part of Spain and Fitz on ESPN Radio at 7 o'clock. And I watch this as much as I do the actual playoff rankings reveal show on ESPN. He and Christine Williamson and Mike Golic Jr. do a rankings reaction show where they sit there and they eat Cheez-Its and they talk to Gary Barta and they talk to Heather Dinich and they rank singers who are better than Taylor Swift. You could tell I watch the show. It's good to have you. How are you?
Man, I'm great, and thanks for watching the show. And I'll tell you, it is, and you appreciate this, especially in Cincinnati. It's been tough the last few weeks to figure out how to ask Gary Barta things that won't prevent him from coming back on the show in future weeks.
I think
this committee is the least consistent I've ever seen.
All right, so of all the gripes you have, because I'm looking at this solely from the standpoint of UC, you're looking more broadly, but obviously UC is a part of the conversation. Where are they? Where does their lack of consistency bother you the most?
I think just the fact that every single one of their debates, they choose a different argument. It's almost like watching a bad debate on First Take. So, you know, when you watch Ohio State take on Oregon, right now Oregon's playing better than – or Ohio State, I should say, sorry, is playing better than Oregon. And all of the metrics bear that out. But then they turn around and they say, yeah, but what a key win for Oregon to beat Ohio State at Ohio State. So they use that as justification for an Oregon team that at times has played really sloppy to keep them – where they are, and then they turn around and tell us that in Michigan, Michigan State, it doesn't matter that Sparty just beat Michigan a few weeks ago, and then they tried to say, but it's the whole body of work. And so I expected this week, I genuinely expected, maybe I'm crazy, that they would right that wrong because Michigan struggled against Penn State, and they turned around and said, yeah, what a quality win to have a big comeback at Penn State, a good football team. And it's like, well, not good enough for you guys to have them ranked at that moment, and they had to come back to beat Penn State, the very same thing that you're faulting Michigan State for having to come back to beat Michigan. So it's like they're just picking and choosing whichever metric they want for that argument to put whatever team they want where they want by the eye test.
All right, from a Cincinnati standpoint, now I kind of view this as cut and dry. We've watched this team, and it's been a miserable way to watch college football because the last four games they've played, three of which have never seriously been in doubt. I wouldn't say that about the Tulsa game, but they've won all four, and yet you walk away from them worrying about, well, how is the fact that they didn't cover the spread, or how is the lack of style points going to hurt them? How is the committee going to punish them for winning but not winning by enough? It's an impossible way to watch a game where your team's up 31-7 and you're worried, oh my God, what if they give up a touchdown here? Or they're up by 17 points and they get stopped at the goal line. Oh man, did they blow an opportunity to go up by 24 points? How's the committee going to react? Well, that paranoia the last couple of weeks has proven to be unfounded because they haven't played great, and yet they haven't been docked for it. They haven't moved. They haven't slid in the rankings. And so the message to me is keep winning, and if someone in front of you loses, the Bearcats are going to be okay. Is that how you take it?
This baseball season, catch every game at Longneck Sports Grill. There are three locations in Northern Kentucky, Wilder, Hebron, and Richwood. Each one of them very easy to get to. Each one of them has 4K TVs all over the place, and the sound will be on. Plus, no place in Northern Kentucky has better wings, and there's also no more extensive beer selection than the one you'll find at Longneck's. Longneck Sports Grill, and by the way, when the weather gets warm, there's nothing like Longneck's patio. Longneck Sports Grill, stay late. Come often.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Yeah, 1,000%. And I do think there are losses still to happen. I mean, frankly, I love the fact that we keep saying, you know, well, if Alabama wins the SEC championship, or if they lose a really close SEC championship game to Georgia, like, Alabama has not looked anywhere near as good as Georgia this year. I think they stand a real chance of getting beat by, you know, at least a touchdown in that game, which should put them at two losses out of this conversation, I would think. We'll see. I think Gary Bartle left a little of that door open in his answers last night. But, you know, that's one portion of it. I'm not sure I trust Oregon versus Utah coming up this weekend. And so, you know, and then the fact that the committee ranked Houston, even if it's 24, that at least gives you another opportunity for the win that you're going to need, you know, to be able to hang your hat on. So I think the committee has left just enough in front of them, also realizing that, you know, there's always a chance of Big Ten chaos.
This is unanswerable, but we talk all the time about, well, a two-loss Alabama team that loses the SEC championship game in a close manner. And people say, well, what if they lose at the by a field goal at the gun? Well, okay, that's a close loss, but so is a 10-point loss that you give up a touchdown at the end and a 3-point game becomes a 10-point game. Or, you know, you're leading all the way and Georgia mounts a furious comeback and they end up winning the game by two scores. Like, we keep talking about close loss in the abstract. I would love to know, where's the difference? Is it two scores? Is it 10 points? Is it 7 points? Is it more than three? What does the loss that officially punts them from consideration look like?
I think the loss that gets them out of the conversation is any loss that isn't a last second, you know, under 2 minutes to go, Georgia drives down the field and gets the win, and everybody says, oh, my God, I can't believe I just saw that. That's the sort of loss that could keep them in. But anything short of reminiscent of the national championship game going to overtime with a walk-off touchdown, anything short of that, I think it would be enough to push them out.
I do think it's interesting, and I don't know if Bart has said this to you or to Reese Davis and the guys, and he may have said it to both. But he did reference, you know, earlier in this process, he made it clear, Georgia and Alabama clear-cut 1 and 2. He did mention last night that 2 through 4 were bunched a little bit more closer than they were a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah, and I think that's an interesting – that's telling you that they're not seeing enough from everybody, and it's leaving them – just enough runway to excuse whatever radical change they want to make at some point. Like, that's one thing that, you know, has always bothered me about the committee. Like, it does feel like sometimes the committee is able to just put their feet up and say, you know what, this stuff will work itself out, and they leave themselves enough leeway for that to happen. And because college football is insane, it usually happens. So I think they're leaving themselves a little bit of leeway to drop Alabama just in case they need to. But frankly, that to me is also because right now Ohio State, in my mind, is playing like the second-best team in the country.
Yeah, I would agree with that wholeheartedly. Jason Fitz is with us. He is on Twitter, at Jason Fitz, ESPN and ESPN Radio. Let's talk about your Raiders. And I don't want to trivialize some of the things that have happened away from the field because they're awful and some have obviously been tragic. What has it been like during this somewhat crazy season where you've got an interim coach now? They jump out to a 5-2 start. They're 3-0 at the beginning of the year. And then there's all this stuff off the field. And the last 2 weeks they've lost a game to the Giants they should have won, a game to the Chiefs that to me was more about Kansas City. What has this 9-week ride been like for you?
It's been wild. It's been the toughest year, the toughest season I can ever remember as a fan, just because nothing feels settled or normal. And you can see that from the team. And one thing that I've said about Derek Carr for years, and you guys will see this on Sunday. If he comes up to the line of scrimmage quickly and he's barking out, you know, we're good, and he's doing the things that he does where he's dissecting everything from the get-go and looks like he's in control, man, he's almost unbeatable when he's feeling it that way. When that's not happening, you can tell very early on when he's pressing too hard and it doesn't look easy, and that's when you know you're in for a long game. And over the last couple of weeks, I think the Derek Carr that has had to be sort of a captain and leader in the locker room has tried to do too much on the field. So this is a Raiders team that was winning games because they were playing with tremendous focus and they were doing all the little things the right way. And when they lose, it's so easy to see why. The offensive line isn't particularly talented. They commit a lot of penalties. Carr starts pushing too hard. The defense is too aggressive. Like, you can see all of these things from a mile away. And I genuinely believe you know what version of the Raiders you're getting in the first 10 minutes.
All right, so we'll keep an eye out for that. What do you like most about this team?
I think there's two things. Carr's control when it's there is really second to none, and Darren Waller is uncoverable. Hunter Renfro also. This is what you guys will also notice quickly is that their two best weapons on offense, and Waller and Renfro, are virtually uncoverable, but they've got to get time to get them the ball. Renfro runs a lot of tricky routes that take time to develop, and Waller, they're usually sending down the field a little farther than most tight ends. So it just all takes time to develop. If the offensive line can give Carr time, it can be very good. On the defensive side of the ball, the double duo of Yannick Ngakoue and Max Crosby is, I mean, virtually unblockable. And what most teams are having to do is decide which one they're going to shut down, which is why if you watch one week, you'll see Ngakoue go off, and the next week Crosby goes off. If you look at the Pro Football Focus grades, Crosby's the best pass rusher in the league this year. He's in the top two in every major category for quarterback hits, quarterback disruption, quarterback hurries. I mean, Crosby is having a not just a good year, he's having a spectacular year and really proving how good he can be. So that element, the pass rush and the ability for the Raiders to get after a team using just their front four is by far the biggest strength of this defense. Now, what Kansas City did is they basically screened them to death. So if you're willing to be super patient as an offense and just continually dunk to guys that are just past the pass rush, you can get some success because the second level didn't tackle well. But that's going to be the great question for Cincinnati is, can Burrow get the time for them to do whatever they want to do offensively?
All right, here's the most important thing. You grew up in Vegas. You love Vegas. You obviously love the Raiders, and that goes back to before they moved to Vegas. There's a lot of folks listening to this right now who are headed to Vegas. Nearly every Bengals fan in my life is going to Vegas for this game except me. Beyond the normal places that people go, as an insider, as a local, as somebody who knows that city better than anybody, give my audience one or two places they should go.
Man, that's actually a great question that I wasn't really ready for. I'm not sure. I'll say this because I've been to two games this year, and you know, honestly, as much as I would love to give you a clever answer, I'll tell you the experience around the Strip is really remarkable. And for anybody that's listening that hasn't been, like, between the Luxor and the Mandalay Bay, they open up a Bud Light like tailgating area that plays all the early games, and everybody's out there and having a good time, and the stadium is gorgeous. Like, I was pretty surprised. And anyone going will be surprised. There's not much of a tailgate area because everybody basically walks over from the Strip. But the Strip is just inundated, and there are going to be a ton of Bengals fans. The away fans have been absolutely loud in every game so far this year. I expect that to be the case again. But the stadium itself is gorgeous. People get to the stadium hours early because there's a band that's playing. But I will give you a stadium tip that nobody else is going to tell you.
Okay.
If you look for the massive torch, the Al Davis torch, which has a bar around the bottom of it, when you get to that bar, if you're facing the torch and you look to your left, hidden back there is a family-friendly priced concession stand that they don't advertise that has, like, hot dogs and pretzels and all that stuff for, like, $3. So instead of getting your food at some of the high-priced ones, go to the one that's right by the torch. You got to find it. It's a little tucked away. I think it just has a generic sign on top that says grill or something like that. But it is cheap and the same food that you're paying more for if you go to the other concession.
Now, see, that's why I had John. Because now you're telling people where to go. And after folks blow all their money on Saturday at the books and at the casinos, now they've got a place to go where they can eat on the cheap. This is why
I had John. I will give you one. There's one site. If I'm going to tell you one thing that everybody should go to, the Neon Museum is really cool, and you got to take an Uber to get there. But the neon, all of the old neon signs from like the 70s, the 60s, from all up and down the Strip have been retired to one outdoor area. where they used to call it the graveyard, but now it's called the Neon Museum. And you pay for a ticket. You can go in the day or you can go at night. And at night, they light all of them up. It is one of the coolest things you will ever see. So that's definitely a people don't realize that they should go check it out.
You are the absolute best, man. Thanks so much.
Appreciate you, but I'm rooting against you on Sunday.
I get it. That's fine. You know, we'll see. You'll hear from me if the road team wins.
and likewise, my friend.
All right, you got it. Jason Fitz, ESPN and ESPN Radio. You'll hear him after Bengals game plan, the second hour of his show with Sarah Spain. We are late for a break. Jim Kelly on the Bearcats in 12 minutes on ESPN 1530. Sports update, a service of Kelsey Chevrolet. Home of lifetime powertrain protection and guaranteed credit approval from their family to yours for life. KelseyChev.com. Microphone still smells, by the way, Taryn. I mean, I guess we could replace. We need spray. Can you spray stuff on a microphone without, you know, breaking the microphone?
I don't know.
I have not. Have you seen a Bengals injury report? Have you? I have not. Bengals play the Raiders on Sunday. By the way, watching the game at Hard Rock Cafe inside Hard Rock Casino. We've had a blast with these this year. It's an awesome place to watch games. The TV setup is just phenomenal. The burgers are great. The beer is cold and plentiful, and so we hope you join us. You can hear Bengals game plan tonight at 6 with Box, Wayne Boxmiller, and Dave Lapham. That is from 6 o'clock until 8. Live on ESPN 1530, Luke Fickell's radio show moved to tonight because of Bearcat basketball last night. The UC football coach at 8 p.m., 8:05 on 700 WLW from the original Montgomery. And college basketball in the area tonight. Miami is hosting Stetson. Dayton has a home game against Lipscomb. And in the Gavitt games, IU takes on St. John's. In Bloomington, I talked a little bit about Jesse Bates yesterday. And one of the stories of this season has been Jesse playing this season after not getting a contract extension that a lot of people thought during this past offseason was inevitable. And then there's the whole conversation about is Jesse Bates the best safety in football? If he is, should the Bengals pay him like he's the best safety in football? And if he's not, well, then the Bengals are right. Jesse was revealing and honest and spoke with great candor on Monday about things have been on my mind, other things have been a distraction for me. I appreciate the honesty. I appreciate the transparency. I love that. At the same time, dude, not that you said it, you can't let that be the case. You can't amplify somebody's argument against you. You can't give somebody who views you a certain way ammunition to keep feeling that way. It just that doesn't work. If you're in a relationship where the other person starts to not trust you, you know what you shouldn't do? Lie to them some more. Give them more reason to not trust you. Otherwise, they'll just distrust you some more. The Bengals do not feel like Jesse Bates is the best safety in football. They have a track record. They've paid guys to be the top player at their position before. They thought A.J. Green was worth paying to be the highest paid wide receiver in the NFL. They did the same thing with Geno Atkins. They've done that before. It's not being cheap. It's pay a guy what you think he's worth. They don't think Jesse's worth more than all the other safeties in football. Jesse's play this year, not what he said, but Jesse's play this year has furthered their argument against him. Like, so far, they've gotten it right. You want to get it done. We all want Jesse to be here. We'd love it if Jesse would play like the old Jesse in the second half of the season. That'd be fantastic. But we talk about the Bengals got Andrew Whitworth wrong, and they did. Their thinking was, I understood it. Didn't like it, but I understood it. They got it wrong. This one, limited sample size. It's only 9 games. And I'm going to defer to what Jesse did last year and say we see it in the second half of the year this year. He's got a lot of financial incentive to do that. Can obviously still franchise tag him. But so far, their position has been right. For all of the go ahead and just get the deal done, which a stance that I took. For all of the, hey, look, just pay him. Come on, man. I was on that boat. He's proven them right. Jim Kelly, the UC Bearcats, the football end of this to me is more pressing than what the committee does. This team has to play better to finish the season undefeated, especially on defense, because what you saw on Friday night for a half was great. For the other half was kind of troubling. And Jim will dissect it next. Got traded from the Castellanis to these other people. It's 12 minutes away from 5 o'clock. My name is Mo Egger. This is ESPN 1530. Richard Skinner will be on the show to dive into the Bengals at 520 today. You see, the Luke Fickell Show is tonight at 8 p.m. We mentioned that. Dan Hoard, Jim Kelly have that.
This baseball season, catch every pitch at Long Neck Sports Grill. Each location has 4K TVs, so you never miss a game. The menu is so extensive, you can get something different every time you visit. I love the wings. And no place in Northern Kentucky has a better beer selection. Locations in Wilder, Hebron, and Richwood. And when the weather is warm, there's nothing better than a warm spring night on Long Neck's outdoor patio. Long Neck Sports Grill. This baseball season, stay late, come often.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus.
Terms and conditions apply. See website for details. At 8:05 from the original Montgomery Inn on 700 WLW, and of course, senior night at UC, or senior day, 3:30 kickoff against SMU at Nippert Stadium. Dan and Jim have the game, starting with the pregame coverage at 3:05 on 700 WLW, and Jim is with us now. How are you, sir?
I'm good. How are you, Mo?
I'm great. Let me start there with senior night, because you've got kids who are part of this program in 2016. That's pre Luke Fickell. You've got kids who are part of this program in 2017, a rough sledding for that entire team and for that new coaching staff. Other kids who have arrived at Cincinnati at various points, some as graduate students. When you think of this collection of seniors and what it's meant to the program, what comes to mind?
Well, very good group of seniors, and let's kind of put seniors in quotation marks, because some of these guys have been around, as you indicated, 6 years, some 5 years. There's some that potentially could be classified as seniors, but because of COVID may choose to come back and have that option of coming back next year, which quite honestly, that's what happened last year. And honestly, that's what makes this team, in my opinion, so special and so good, is a handful of those guys, the Curtis Brooks of the world that came back, the Kobe Bryants of the world, Desmond Ridder, although his was more of a, okay, should I go to the NFL last year or this year? Same thing, well, Gardner couldn't go till this year. But there's some guys that chose to come back, and they felt that they hadn't accomplished everything they wanted to last year, and coming back this year would be a special year. And quite honestly, so far they're right. They've got some work to do still. But this is a special class of what we'll call seniors, I guess, or last year guys that, you know, many of them, most of them will go through the ceremony of senior night on this coming Saturday. Some probably, like Sauce Gardner, won't be in that line, but will choose to leave this year. But it's a pretty special class, no doubt about it.
Yeah, no question. Let's talk about some good stuff here. So offensively, I liked a lot of what UC did once they stopped turning over the ball on Friday. It felt to me, without Jerome Ford, that there was more variety to the running game. It felt to me like they tapped into a short passing game that we really haven't seen them be able to succeed with to the extent that we thought when the season began. I wonder how much of that can be applied to the next three opponents.
Well, I agree with you all the way. I think the fact that Ford was out, And I will say this, I thought the running game was pretty good against South Florida. Passing game superb, even though the numbers weren't spectacular. I thought that Desmond had a really, really good game, his first 300-yard game this year, two touchdowns and ran for a third. I hope so. I really do believe that offense, yes, the turnovers, you hit a key point there, that hurt in the beginning. Once they got past that point, they moved the ball effectively. I think the defense could have been a little stronger at times, particularly in the second half. But all in all, the offense looked really good against the Bulls.
So let's talk about what they did defensively, because for the better part of a half, they were dominant. And then in the second half, you give up a touchdown on a 75-yard play where it's bad coverage, bad angle, guy runs down the field. That happens. What shouldn't happen against a defense of this caliber are drives of 12 plays, 75 yards, and the 98-yard drive, multiple third and longs being converted, multiple third and 16s being converted against a defense that is supposed to be this good and has often been that good as advertised. Why did those things happen on Friday?
Yeah, I mean, that good is exactly right. All you needed to do, you didn't have to go too far back, go back to the first half where they gave up 39 yards. They were really good. They were stopping the run. They were getting to the passing lanes. You know, we'll give South Florida a little bit of credit. They came out, made some adjustments at halftime, came out, and were hitting some passes. And they were doing some things that we've seen other teams do against the Bearcats. One was the slant route, which, quite honestly, well, play action involved in that, too, to hold the linebackers to the inside and hitting that quick slant route. And there's really nothing you can do from a secondary standpoint except make a tackle on the spot. Now, maybe you're a safety and you see it coming and you jump it. Yeah, you can do that. But the linebackers have to be better at getting into those lanes and shut that window down, because we've seen that happen now for a couple of weeks in a row. South Florida was able to really, during those drives that you just described, utilize that short passing game and keep those drives going. And we're going to see a little bit better passing team this week with SMU than we saw with South Florida. So they're going to have to be prepared for that. And then the minute you start jumping those routes, coming in on them hard, that's when they take up, you know, when SMU might go up top or a double move and make you think they're doing a slant and go deep. So got to be careful. But defense, I thought, did give up a little bit too much yardage, played a little soft in the second half. But all in all, they were, you know, solid in the first half, but not so much in the second half. But the offense kept them in the game.
There were.
And you're right about the one play, that one long run. I mean, that was a broken play.
Right.
Missed coverage. So I'm not too worried about those kind of things happen. Honestly, if I think back, I think that's the first time that's happened this year.
Yeah.
And if you get by a whole season with one long play where you made, you know, a mistake in your coverage and or missed a tackle, I think you hit it better. Hit it right on the head, said took a wrong angle. That's exactly what happened in that play.
I think the thing that stood out to me more than anything is Myjai Sanders was in the offensive backfield. Nobody else on the defensive line was. So do you have to rethink your philosophy about sending pressure?
Well, I think you do. And you look at this team, this week's team opponent, SMU, in 10 games, in a pass-happy team, they've only given up 11 sacks. That's not too many. And if you're not getting to the quarterback, then you know, you better be playing darn good coverage. And you're right, Curtis Brooks, Marcus Brown, trying to think who else was in. Well, you know, Jabari Taylor was in there for quite a while. We had Briggs in there, the transfer from Virginia, Malik Van. Those guys really weren't getting to the quarterback. Sanders did. Now, I will say this, South Florida had a large experienced offensive line, but so does everybody. So you better be doing something to get to the quarterback, particularly if you're going to be sending extra people, because obviously you're not going to have as many back covering. And when the Bearcats did play just a three-man rush and played eight, even in that case, South Florida was finding some holes. And Tanner Mordecai, who's the SMU quarterback, he's averaging, his average completion percentage is just shy of 70%. And, you know, he's I don't know, they throw the ball a lot, and he's thrown for 3,200 yards and 37 touchdowns this year. So, you know, it's pass-happy offense, so you better be ready, and you better be getting some people in his face. So I don't know what they'll do. It's hard to say whether they'll send pressure at him. The one thing that we have seen in the last 2 weeks that I think is really good is at the right time, maybe particularly off the boundary side, Sauce Gardner on a corner blitz has got to the quarterback three times in the last two games. Two sacks, I believe, out of that, almost a third. So they're mixing it up a little bit. I like that. It's not just your standard, kind of A-gap blitz up the middle, kind of mixing things up, trying to keep the quarterback a little bit confused.
I'm getting nervous, Jim. I'm getting, they're 10-0. I could taste it. We're getting to the point of the season that ultimately – I think we look forward to quality opponents. That ECU game is tougher than I think people realize. Houston's very good. I'm like, now this has been fun until now. Now nerves have taken over the joy.
You are absolutely right. These next three, I'm telling you what, people say, East Carolina, you know, baloney. I'm telling you what, man. First of all, they were never horrible at the beginning of the year, but man, have they got better. And we all know what goes on when Cincinnati goes down there. It's always a battle. So, you know, first things first, SMU, man, you know, 41 points a game, 500 yards of offense a game, 69.9% completion percentage, 37 touchdowns. You know, they're really, really good. The saving grace there is they're giving up a lot of yardage and a lot of points. And the way the Bearcat offense played last week, they'll be able to keep up with them that way. But you're going to have to keep them under 41 points, and you're going to have to keep them under 500 yards of offense. And we'll worry about East Carolina next week, but, you know, hey, be sure they are really good. And it is going to be a battle down there. And we won't even talk about Houston, who clinched the spot in the American Conference championship game already. So, but you're right, Mo. This is a fun time of the year. You got three opponents left. If you're able to get into the conference championship game, which, you know, again, assuming Cincinnati wins this week, they'll be in. But they're still going to have to go down to Greenville, North Carolina, and beat East Carolina. Then, you know, assuming they win that one, come home and play a very good Houston team at Nippert Stadium on December 4th.
All right. We'll see you Saturday. Enjoy the show tonight, Jim. Thanks so much.
Okay. All right. Thanks, Bob.
Jim Kelly, Dan Hort have the game on Saturday. It's a 3:30 kickoff at Nippert, and the show tonight at 8:05 on 700 WLW. What do we have? Oh, another hour of the show. For a second, I thought we were done. Richard Skinner will be with us at 5:20. You are going to hear some Joe Burrow. Joe talked today. And perhaps the most important part of Zach Taylor's press conference from earlier this afternoon. Plus, more on Reds ownership making almost $86 million on the sale of a hotel, the college football playoff rankings. And the most important thing about the second half of the Bengals season is you can tell we have a loaded, action-packed, chock-full of information and sports commentary hour of radio in front of us. We hope you're here for it on ESPN 1530 Cincinnati Sports Station.
Here you go. It's a 6 after 5, minute late. That's my fault. This is ESPN 1530. Thank you so much for listening. Richard Skinner from Local 12, be on the show, 5:20, because it's Wednesday. And on Wednesdays, he joins us to talk about the Cincinnati Bengals, who play, as you just heard that guy say, the Raiders on Sunday. By the way, Bengals game plan, just about an hour from now, boxes in for Dan Hort, alongside Dave, not really alongside, more across the table from Dave Lapham, 2 hours wall-to-wall Bengals discussion starting at 6 p.m. Looking forward to that. For my ride home. Also, you'll hear from Joe Burrow, who spoke today, and the most important part of Zach Taylor's press conference, plus a nugget about Luis Castillo that I take as neither good or bad, and neither should you. Quickly here, we've spent the last couple of days, I think, pretty heavy focus on UC, understandably so. They're in the national championship playoff discussion, which means they're in the national championship discussion. That is undeniable. I hear see on Twitter, oh, they're not even in the discussion. Like, really? They didn't just, the committee just decided to put it 5 without talking about them? Like, yeah, they're in the discussion. They need some stuff to happen. And admittedly, yeah, we just had Jim Kelly on the show. I think we have, over the last 4 games, kind of viewed what has happened with the Bearcats and the way they've played through the wrong lens. Because the committee has clearly not cared that much that UC didn't put away USF as early in the game as maybe they should have. And they clearly didn't hold against them the fact that Tulsa came back and threatened to tie the game in the final minutes. And they didn't hold against them the fact that they only beat Navy by 7. And they didn't hold against them the fact that they didn't cover the spread against Tulane. So does that mean all is well and good? Well, no, because I think the way to process what's happened over the previous 4 games, and for me specifically the USF game, is what happened in those games that could be problematic when they start playing better teams. I feel pretty good about this game on Saturday against SMU because I don't think it's a team that's built to eat a bunch of clock, run the football against them.
they're going to throw, and they're going to score. I think Cincinnati can score, I don't want to say with relative ease, but I think the Bearcats can score against SMU enough to win a game at home and advance. I do think we are sort of beyond having to, you know, crunch every single point and, well, is 14 points enough? Is 17 points enough? Now, I kind of believe 1 point is enough. But I do think we've sort of watched what's unfolded here through the wrong lens. And that lens that we've watched it through a lot of us has been, well, how's the committee going to react to this? The answer has been none. And I put this on Twitter last night, and it wasn't a criticism of any UC fan because I understand the paranoia that exists here. This is a system that's not designed to work for schools like UC. That is not a complaint. That is just reality. It's not. The G5 schools, fair, wrong, right, whatever, they're held to a different standard. For UC, it's a different standard.
This baseball season, catch every game at Longneck Sports Grill. There are three locations in Northern Kentucky, Wilder, Hebron, and Richwood. Each one of them very easy to get to. Each one of them has 4K TVs all over the place, and the sound will be on. Plus, no place in Northern Kentucky has better wings, and there's also no more extensive beer selection than the one you'll find at Longneck's. Longneck Sports Grill, and by the way, when the weather gets warm, there's nothing like Longneck's patio. Longneck Sports Grill, stay late. Come often.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather, now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
VGW Group, no purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions, 18+.
It is, again, not a complaint. But when you're held to a different standard, you do get paranoid about, okay, well, what's the committee going to do to basically ensure that you can't reach the standard they're looking for? What can they do to change the standard? What can they do to move the goalpost or the goal line, which is popular verbiage in this day and age? So I understand that, but again, the thing for me watching this team has been that defense for a unit that is so good, so deep, and so experienced looked anything but against USF. And I do think you have to rethink applying pressure to the quarterback. I do think you have to rethink ways to get in the backfield. I do think against teams that are going to run the ball against you, which these next three are better probably throwing it. What are you going to do to ensure that you don't get pushed around to the extent they were pushed around against Tulsa and Tulane? And what about that running game did Cincinnati tap into that could make them more explosive on offense? Because I liked a lot of what I saw against USF. Now, in terms of the committee and the rankings, I'm not that interested in what Gary Barta has to say. It's a process we don't like. When somebody explains a process that we don't like, guess what's going to happen? We're not going to like what he says. To me, it's wasted energy to get mad at what Gary Barta says. I'm more interested in what the committee does. And what the committee did to UC was, I think, send a pretty clear message. You're cool. You're good. You're fine. You need help. They do need help. They're not in the top four right now. Some stuff has to happen. We have acknowledged that all along since well before the season began. But the message the committee has sent is, you're good, which means now the paranoia doesn't have to shift to Oklahoma State. They're telling you now, they think Oklahoma State is significantly not as good as UC. Four spots. They're telling you Notre Dame is not as good as UC. They haven't, Notre Dame moved up because the team in front of them lost, but at no point have they really closed the gap between UC and Notre Dame. I am not worried about those teams that are behind them. Sure, if Michigan beats Ohio State, assuming that Ohio State beats Michigan State, which I will, if Michigan were to beat Ohio State, yeah, Michigan's probably going to leapfrog UC, and I'm not going to have a huge qualm with that based on the current rankings. They're one spot behind Cincinnati. And if Michigan State were to beat Ohio State, win a game that they're favored to lose by 19 points, I kind of expect Michigan State to leapfrog Cincinnati as well. The question is then going to be about Oregon, what happens against Utah. But the message specifically about UC to UC has been, you're cool, you're good, you're fine, you're okay. So I know we like to get worked up. Well, what's going to happen with Notre Dame? And I was joking on Monday's show with Tony. I got mad about something that's not going to happen. It was acknowledged last night by Gary Barta, if you care about what he says, that they really haven't started to consider Notre Dame as a top four team. And why would you? Nothing against the Irish. I hope Notre Dame wins. I've rooted for Notre Dame to play every football game they've been in up until October the 2nd since Brian Kelly left, because I like Brian Kelly. Notre Dame's not going to pass UC if the Bearcats are 13-0. I don't fear Oklahoma State. I don't think the committee is going to defy what it's done so far. Oklahoma State still has to play a game against Oklahoma. The committee doesn't think highly at all of Oklahoma, didn't when they had no losses, doesn't now that they have one loss. The committee doesn't think that much of the Big 12. So I'm going to take, and you might say, Mo, you're giving the committee too much credit. I'm going to take them at their basically their word. I'm going to take what they've done at face value and apply it to the way this process may work down the road. The message from that committee to UC has been, you're good. You're fine. Maybe you haven't played the toughest schedule, okay? That's kind of a built-in part of this. Maybe you haven't won some of these games by as many points as some might have thought, but you know what? You didn't lose them. And two of them, by the way, you won by three scores. I mean, they won two of those games by more than two touchdowns. I mean, it's not like all these games came down to a field goal. Tulsa game was in doubt. Tulsa did not really come close to winning it. Navy never came close to winning either. The Bearcats didn't have to stage these late-game comebacks. The message has been, you're good. Still need some stuff to happen, but if you keep doing what you're doing, which is just win football games, you're going to be fine. Now, are there unanswerable questions about Alabama losing a second game and what it would look like? 100%. But you'll drive yourself nuts going down that road. And, you know, it feels to me like folks who cover this and pay attention to it with an incredible amount of scrutiny all seem to believe the Bearcats are fine. Some might not think they should be fine. You'll find people who think Cincinnati is overrated. You'll find people who think they should be in the top four. I've, you know, canvassed a lot of college football opinions recently. But the overwhelming message has been keep winning and you're going to be okay. And it does feel like we've moved beyond, oh God, style points and margin of victory and did they cover the spread. Would it help if UC beat SMU by 31 points? Yeah. Would it help if they beat ECU by 45 points? Yeah. Would it help if they took Houston and beat them 56-0? Of course. By the way, the most important thing for UC about last night might have been the inclusion of Houston in the top 25. Because they're now saying that's a good win if you win the game. That's important. But I think the part of the season where we just, it's 31-7 and I'm still nervous that they might not win by enough, I think that's over. I think that's past us. Because each of those last four games, they did not cover. And while they ranked them sixth and everybody was upset about it, it didn't bother me quite as much. They were going to rank Ohio State ahead of Cincinnati. And they were going to rank Oregon ahead of Ohio State, even despite the Stanford loss. Since then, they've moved up and they've held steady. The message has been, you're good. I'm not telling you to go ahead and book your reservations for the semifinal game in the college football playoff. I am telling you, though, that if you've been paranoid about all this other, just they've won games. They've been fine. They need stuff to happen. We've known that from the get-go. Most importantly, this team has to play better. And not because they're not beating teams by enough, because they are playing some teams that can beat them. 17 minutes after 5 o'clock. Phone number is 513-749-1530. More phone calls here in a bit. We have been busy today. Bengals getting set for the Las Vegas Raiders on Sunday. A 5-4 team versus a 5-4 team. Cincinnati, a slight favorite. There have been some injuries and some doubt that has crept in because of the way they played against Cleveland and the way they played against the Jets. We'll sift through all of that with our guy Richard Skinner next. Make Roger Goodell seem like he has a personality. You know, as a podcast is Richard Skinner, the Skinny Podcast. Richard is with Local 12. You can read his work at local12.com, and you can follow him on Twitter at local12skinny. He's with us every single Wednesday. How was Texas Roadhouse?
It was fabulous, of course. When have you ever had a bad meal at Texas Roadhouse, Mo? Come on.
I don't think I have ever had a bad meal. I've never had, like, the meal that changed my life at Texas Roadhouse, but I've never walked away from there going, I'm never coming back there again.
Yeah, the precinct or Jeff Ruby's is a meal that will change your life. But
right.
Texas Roadhouse is just a good, solid Wednesday night. Let's go there for birthday dinner. That's all I can tell
you. Yeah, those other places also going to change your budget. And Texas Roadhouse is not going to do that. You wrote about the bye week hangover, and I think this is interesting to a degree, because I remember going into the second half of the year last year thinking, like, all right, here we go. Second half of the year, Joe Burrow. They go to Pittsburgh. The game was windy as hell, and they get absolutely just pounded. It wasn't very good. And then the Baltimore game coming off the bye last year wasn't so great. A lot of folks have sort of said, okay, reset. They lost the two games. Everybody in the AFC North loses. Chance for this team to get up back on track. I don't know that any type of game on Sunday would surprise me.
No, either way, you're right. I do think that the bye probably was a good time to reset. And I did like an answer Brian Callahan gave us Monday to that question of the bye week hangover. It was phrased in the vein of, you know, does it maybe matter this year if you have something to play for? And right or wrong, I think for any player the last couple of years, and trust me, as a writer, get to the bye week, you went, whew, all right, take a week off, and now let's just play out the string and we're good. You know, this year is a little more around, you know, even for us covering it, there's the anticipation of where could this team go and what can this team do. And I think for the players, and it sounds like a cacophony of everybody's put the script to this and they're saying the same thing, but it is true. I mean, they do hold their own destiny. I mean, literally, they don't have to worry about watching other teams and what they do. They have to just worry about what they do. And they have a chance to stay in contention for this and maybe make the playoffs. And I think that probably freshens things up a little bit, too. I'd be really surprised this time around if you saw a clunker out of the bye week. I really would. I'm not telling you I'm going to see a win for sure, but I don't think you'll see the clunker you've seen at least the last few years coming out of the bye.
We went into this season asking, what's the reasonable expectation for this defense? And then for much of the first half of the year, they overachieved. The last two games, not so much. So let's reset that question. What's the reasonable expectation for this defense over the final eight games?
Somewhere in between. I don't think it's been as bad as it's been the last 2 weeks, and I don't think it was as good as it was at points. I mean, let's face it, when they played Pittsburgh, it was Najee Harris touching the ball 602 times and Ben throwing three-yard passes. In Chicago, the defense played pretty well against Chicago, but still, that's not a very good offense. Wasn't then, isn't now. I think some of that factored into it. They gave up a couple big plays in the Green Bay game, but played reasonably well. I think against good teams, I think that's the reasonable expectation, is just to have the defense be able to keep you in it, keep some teams into the low 20s. I'm not looking for the 86 Bears, and I'm not certainly looking for the Bengals post-bye from a few years ago in Marvin Lewis's last year when they're giving up 500 yards a game every week. I do think it's somewhere in between. But you need, you know, I mentioned last week, I think you need to see DJ Reed or Larry Ogunjobi do some of the things they did the first few weeks. And look, I know they went all in on Eli Apple again today, that he's the guy for now without Trey Waynes. They need Trey Waynes back. They just do. I mean, you sign him for all that money for a reason. He was supposed to be your shutdown corner. You give me him and Awuzie out there on the outside, I feel much better with it. I'm not buying the Eli Apple train.
In the absence of Trey Waynes coming back, what do you expect the role to be short-term, at least, for Hargraves and Flowers?
But, you know, this question was asked of Zach on Monday, and he kind of worked his way around it. And he kind of did the same thing again today. It doesn't sound like he was overly high on those two guys getting a lot of reps. So probably Flowers is ahead because he's been here longer. He's now going on, I think this will be his fourth week with the team, and he's played some games. Hargraves, and it's legit. He's only been here for 1.5 practices. I mean, he was signed, 10 days ago, but they went through the bye week and didn't practice, obviously. So he hasn't been through a whole lot of practices. But I got to be honest with you, man. I can't imagine that you have a long leash with Eli if he struggles on Sunday with how much that game means. And then we'll see where it goes moving forward. You know, Trey was out on the rehab field today. I don't know if that's a great sign. It's at least a sign. He's not back this week. I'm going to guess that means he's not back next week. Then shouldn't be trending that way. So you need to have to play better, or you need to make a decision to get one of these other guys out there to see if they can do anything better. Because he did it at guard. I mean, you put Adeniji at guard because you didn't like what Jackson Carmen was doing. That's great. That's fine. Stinks that Jackson Carmen wasn't doing what you hoped, but you didn't want to waste weight around for it anymore. You needed to put somebody in there you thought was going to be better, and that's what they think Adeniji is going to be.
Vernon Hargraves has gone through 1.5 practice. Has Eli Apple practiced at all this year?
He has practiced.
Okay, I wasn't sure.
I can promise you that. It may not always show up on Sunday, but he has practiced.
The obvious answer is Joe Burrow stops throwing the ball to the other team. Offensively, what's the biggest question that has to be answered over the next eight games?
I go back to something I've talked about all year. What is your identity? And I think your identity should be centered around 28 touching the ball more often. Joe Mixon. I think they're much better when Joe Burrow's under center, handing it off to Joe Mixon coming from a downhill start, running against that wide with the wide zone scheme as opposed to running from the shotgun. And I think it gives Joe Burrow more opportunities to play action pass and do some of the bootleg stuff off of that. And I think he's really good at that kind of stuff. I think to me that's the big question is what are you going to be offensively? The weather's going to get worse, obviously. You're going to need to run the ball more, and I think you need to rely on Joe Mixon more in the second half. I think they had a plan for that against Cleveland, though. I mean, he ran it 10 times for 56 in the first half, and they were effective, and then obviously fell way behind and had to throw. I do think you'll see more of Joe Mixon in the second half. I don't think there was a consistency of him touching the ball like I thought there was going to be in the first half.
It's interesting because you could just look at the numbers. He's on pace for 1,200 yards rushing. In a 17-game year, he's averaging exactly his career average per carry, 4.2. He's on pace for about 50 catches. It doesn't feel like it. Having watched it week to week, it doesn't feel like he's been that productive.
This baseball season, catch every game at Long Neck Sports Grill. There are three locations in Northern Kentucky, Wilder, Hebron, and Richwood. Each one of them very easy to get to. Each one of them has 4K TVs all over the place, and the sound will be on. Plus, no place in Northern Kentucky has better wings. And there's also no more extensive beer selection than the one you'll find at Longnecks. Longnecks Sports Grill. And by the way, when the weather gets warm, there's nothing like Longnecks Patio. Longnecks Sports Grill. Stay late. Come often.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Yeah, because it doesn't feel consistent, right? I mean, I don't need a guy to be penciled in for 20 carries, 84 yards every game. The league doesn't work that way. You know, in the perfect world, you run for 3.5 yards per carry and you get a first down every series. It just doesn't work that way in the league. It's a yard here, 2 yards here, 15 yards here, 2 yards there. But it doesn't feel like it. And I just think that he's kind of the key to unlocking this offense all the way is relying on him more and then working your play-action stuff off of it.
Awesome stuff as always, man. Thanks so much.
You bet. Take care. I may go to Texas Roadhouse again.
Well, tonight. Let me know when you do. I'll join you. Very good.
I'll save a roll for you.
Please do. Richard Skinner on Twitter, at Local12Skinny. Read him at Local12.com. It's 5:30. Interesting nugget about Luis Castillo in The Athletic yesterday. That coming up in 15 minutes. We'll try to grab a phone call or two, and you'll hear Joe Burrow. And I think the most important part is Zach Taylor's press conference on ESPN 1530 Cincinnati Sports Station. Sports Update is a service of Kelsey Chevrolet, home of Lifetime Powertrain Protection, guaranteed credit approval from their family to yours for life. KelseyChev.com. The Bengals are getting set to play the Las Vegas Raiders. First ever game in Vegas. Did you know that? They haven't played in Vegas before. Would you like the injury report? I'd be happy to give it to you. That's what I do. Give information. Tyler Shelvin didn't practice. Knee. Trey Hopkins, limited knee. Auden Tate, limited thigh. There's Brandon Wilson and Akeem Davis-Gaither who, you know, likely done for the year. But aside from that. And those are big asides. Pretty damn healthy. Game at 4:05 on Sunday here at Live on ESPN 1530. Pre-game coverage at 12 o'clock. Bengals coming off a bye. Here's quarterback Joe Burrow on the shows he watched while the Bengals weren't playing.
It was great. It was good to get away. Everyone needs to take their mind off of football for a little bit so you can come back ready to go for this last half of the season that we're ready to push for. No, just relaxed. Didn't do too much.
Last year was
Clay Gambit.
Did you
watch? I watched the this Catching Killers deal on Netflix. That was pretty good. Billy Milligan. That one on Netflix is pretty good. That's really all I got into.
Meanwhile, Zach Taylor preparing for Cincinnati's trip to the gambling capital of the world.
You ever been to Vegas?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I am a craps player. That is it. My wife, she knows we don't go to Vegas together. I just spend 72 hours at the craps table. I don't go to shows. I don't go to dinner. I don't go to the pool.
My God.
I just like to play craps. Very, very low wages craps, low stakes craps. But
nobody believes that.
Yeah, about once every 2 or 3 years. I usually self-impose a ban when I lose. You know, I don't lose a lot of money, but when I lose money, I kind of eliminate that from my life. But, yeah, I like it. But again, that's the message. Vegas is always going to be there in May, in July, whatever it is. And our focus is a business trip this week. And let's go focus on winning a football game.
That's enough. I want to hear more about Zach playing craps. I don't believe that he's a low-limit player. And like, an NFL coach is putting $5 on the pass line. Right? I'm a craps guy. In fact, I'm craps guy, little blackjack, that's it. That other stuff, I'm not playing roulette, sucker's game. Mahjong, don't know what it is. Pai Gal poker, no clue. Poker itself, uh-uh. Blackjack, though, the other players, if they stink, they can influence you. Craps, you're on your own, but the key is you got to have a fun table. There's nothing worse than folks at the table who aren't having fun. The beauty of craps is, for the most part, if you win, everybody wins. Now, there are some bets you can make that others won't and vice versa. But the key to a craps table is the quality of the people you're playing with, especially if, like, the coach of the Cincinnati Bengals, he's playing for 72 hours. Is that 72 hours continuous? Did anybody ask that question? Really? It didn't occur to anybody for a follow-up. God knows we could follow up about an injured running back or something, but we couldn't follow up with, like, hey, Zach, really quick, 72 hours straight? No buffet? I know you're not going to shows. No, you're not going to the pool, which, by the way, kind of a mistake. Vegas has a bunch of great pools, especially in the summertime. I'm fine. You want to go see Penn and Teller? I get it. Are you a buffet guy? Great steakhouses? Cigar bar? Or just nothing? Plane lands, you get to McCarran Airport, drop your bags, 72 hours at the craps table. Or do you get some sleep? How does that work? And where are your favorite places to play craps? You go to some of those casinos where they'll bring you free drinks if you're playing craps? And what's your walkaway point? Is it just, you know what, somebody rolled a 7, I've been there for 72 hours, got to go. Hey, fun quotient at the table is not so good, so I got to bail. Lots of questions about this. If Zach is going to go all about what he does playing craps, you got to follow that up. College basketball tonight, Miami is hosting Stetson. School named after a hat. Dayton will take on Lipscomb, and Indiana battles St. John's in a game that would have been good in, like, I don't know, 1986. Luke Fickell's radio show is tonight. That'll be at 8:05 on 700 WLW. What's your go-to table game? Do you have a go-to table game, Taryn? No? You're not a slots guy, are you?
I don't gamble.
Well, that's not true. You've told me about wagers you've made in football.
No games in a casino.
Really? No games in a casino?
Yeah.
Okay. That's fair. That's fine. Whatever. To each their own. I'm not the world's most gigantic casino guy when it comes to playing table games. I like to go to the casino, play a little bit, drink some drinks, people watch. And then if there's a sports book, which in Ohio there will be soon, we're good to go. But yeah, I like craps. Craps is the most fun game. And, like, if there's a crappy craps player, no pun intended, next to you, it doesn't screw you up. If there's a lousy blackjack player to your right, dude, get up and go. That could be rough. Also, it does feel like craps dealers have more of a personality than blackjack dealers. I mean, I'm there to have fun. I'm there to entertain me, okay? I need you to, you know, make sure you're paying out the right wagers and stuff, but entertain me. I don't need a Shecky the comedian, but have a personality. There's nothing worse than any sort of casino dealer, and they just don't want to be there. They hate you, they hate themselves, they hate the world, and we're just going to have a frown on our face. Like, dude, go do something else. You're dealing with me. I'm there to be entertained. Could you smile? There you go.
For someone who's never been to Vegas, which casino in Vegas would you recommend someone go to?
Oh, I don't know. It depends on what you're looking for.
A craps guy like you want to have fun.
It just, you know, I'm genuinely a low-limit guy. Zach Taylor, I don't believe Zach Taylor's walking up to the craps table with, like, hey, I got $100 in chips, $5 in the pass line, and then as soon as I let that go, you're not playing for 72 hours if you're not there to spend and hopefully win some money. I don't believe he's low-limit. What's low-limit to him and what's low-limit for me? I like Caesars, like Bally's. I like the Flamingo, even though it's old and decrepit. It is. Like Paris, which is next to Bally's. Like New York, New York. I like to go to Old Vegas. Play blackjack for a buck. All right. Ken Rosenthal says Luis Castillo not likely to be traded. Incredible take on that next. Yeah, a friend of mine, we were talking about Zach Taylor playing craps for 72 hours. Says a friend of mine's wife hit a slot in Vegas 2 weeks ago, the Wheel of Fortune slot, for $1.7 million. That's got to be hard if you're the other person on the trip. Hey, we're going to Vegas. We're going to crush it. It's going to be a blast. You lose like $150, they win $1.7 mil. It's a tough one. Like I've done the thing in Vegas where somebody wins a good chunk of change and, hey, we're not going to tell the wife. We're not going to tell the other half. $1.7 mil would be kind of hard to hide, right? Yeah. Oh, I win $1.2 mil. There was a guy that I worked with once. He does radio in Columbus, and I had to do extra innings with him once. And he showed up late because he was at the casino. He won $20,000, like playing blackjack or something. And he brought it all up in cash because he didn't want to leave it in his car. I'm like, why are you here? Just go home. You made $20,000 today. I can do the baseball show by myself. Also, can I have some of that money? Before we talk about what Ken Rosenthal wrote about Luis Castillo, which surely you're aware of already, let's talk with Mike. Mike, what's up?
Mo, I'm on Interstate 17 heading up to Vegas and excited as can be, like a little kid.
Are you a Vegas pro?
No, by no means. But I've been there probably 20 times. But
sure, what's your favorite place to go in Vegas?
Well, right now it's Mandalay.
Mandalay?
I like Mandalay.
Well,
now,
when you go to Vegas, is it just gambling? Is it you going to shows? Are you going to go see like somebody who's in residency in there in Vegas? Well, buffet. What is your Vegas? Sort of outline the perfect Vegas day for you.
Well, shows. I did that so many times. My kids used to love to go to Circus, which was really cool.
Okay, very good.
I don't even know if that still exists because I haven't been up here for about 3 or 4 years. But the food thing. Hey, thank you so much for Jason Fitz tip.
See, it's what I do. We provide a service here.
No, you did. That was awesome, brother. I got the biggest grin on my face when you were talking to him as I was driving up the freeway. I was telling Karen there's a stretch of the I-15 for 160 miles. There is no gas, no water, no food, no nothing. You, the coyotes, and the roadrunners.
Yeah.
By Baker, California.
That sounds delightful.
Yeah, it's really fun.
Yeah. You know what the biggest buzzkill person in Vegas is? The person you go to Vegas with who wants to take a side trip to the Hoover Dam. Right? Hey, we're going to go out. It's going to be awesome. We're going to just nightlife. We're going to gamble. And we're going to sports book. And we're going to go eat great restaurants. Hey, yeah. How about Wednesday? We go out to the Hoover Dam. Oh, okay. Don't go to Vegas with that person. Anytime you're like planning a trip to Vegas, and the person's like, oh, yeah, we could also, like, break out to Hoover Dam. Just don't invite them or change your plans.
Hey, dude, I was coming. When I got out of the military, my dad came out to California and drove back with me. And we went to see a friend of his in Henderson, which is a suburb there of Vegas, and that he had been in since I fire department with. And I said, come on, Dad, let's go downtown. This is going to be a blast. My dad was a very, very adept poker player. And this friend of his convinced my dad that you got to go to Hoover Dam. Oh, yeah, it's a seventh engineering feat of the world and the blah, blah, blah. I've never been so bored in my life, Mo. It sucked. It sucked hard. Because I was only like 25 years old or 23, and I didn't want to be at the Hoover Dam. Hey, Mo, are we going to start using Chris Evans? Is he going to be the Robert Woods of the Cincinnati Bengals?
I would like to think so. I you know, he had kind of the breakout game against the Lions, then had the hamstring injury, and then the Browns game fell apart. I think there's a role for him in this offense. And I think it's more than just, you know, one or two pass patterns that he runs. I think there's something they can tap into there. And so I greatly hope so.
Is his hamstring healed? Have you heard?
He's not on the injury report, so yeah, I'm led to believe he's fine.
Oh God, I hope so. Hey, because I'm thinking, you know, I don't know, maybe I'm getting way ahead of myself, but if he can be the type of guy I'm thinking about, you know, I keep thinking a little guys like that of that stature, like a Julian Edelman or a Robert Woods, the guys who are willing to do the dirty work. I wonder if he's that kind of guy, because boy, if he is, they're invaluable.
Yeah, I would. I'm led to believe that he is. I'm led to believe that that's part of his makeup. But I also, I think there's a dimension of athleticism and explosiveness that he could add to this team, especially throwing the football. Mike, I got to run, man. Thank you.
Thanks, Al. Appreciate it.
Very good. A couple minutes away from 6 o'clock. 513-749-1530 and 866-702-3776. Here's, Taryn, you like cigars? I'm a big cigar guy. Casa Fuente, inside Caesars, the Forum Shops. It's one of my three favorite places on earth. Top-of-the-line cigars. It's right across the street from the famous memorabilia store where Pete Rose for years signed autographs. Dennis Rodman walked into that cigar store once, got done signing autographs, sat right down with us. They also make the greatest mojito on earth. If you're going to Vegas for the Bengals game, and the ventilation is perfect, so even if you're like, all right, I want to go, I want to have a cocktail, I don't want to suck in a bunch of cigar smoke, it's perfectly ventilated. And Fuente Cigars, chef's kiss. Show's over. Hey, Ken Rosenthal says it's unlikely the Reds trade Luis Castillo. Here's the good part of that. They're asking for a lot. They're not giving him away. That's good. Here's the bad part of that. They're probably just going to go ahead and trade him at the deadline next year. Have a great night. We're back at it tomorrow at 3:05. Bengals game plan is next on ESPN 1530 Cincinnati Sports Station. This baseball season, catch every pitch at Long Neck Sports Grill. Each location has 4K TVs, so you never miss a game. The menu is so extensive, you can get something different every time you visit. I love the wings. And no place in Northern Kentucky has a better beer selection. Locations in Wilder, Hebron, and Richwood. And when the weather is warm, there's nothing better than a warm spring night on Long Neck's outdoor patio. Long Neck Sports Grill. This baseball season, stay late, come often.